am so pleased to welcome to the Introvert Ally podcast today, Douglas R. Conant. Doug is the only former Fortune 500 CEO who is a New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author, a top 50 leadership innovator, a top 100 leadership speaker, and one of the 100 most influential authors in the world. A devoted leadership practitioner and teacher, Doug's 45-year career has been defined by achieving high performance through an intentional commitment to studying, practicing, improving, and spreading the tenets of leadership that works. And one quote that I love that's attributed to Doug is, "Your life story is your leadership story." Doug serves on numerous boards and is a chair of several, including the Chief Executives for Corporate Purpose. His Wall Street Journal best-selling book, co-authored with Amy Fetterman, is called The Blueprint, Six Practical Steps to Lift Your Leadership to New Heights. It's a seminal treatise on leadership and a practical guide for leading effectively in a chaotic world. He's also the New York Times best-selling co-author with Mette Norgaard of Touchpoints, Creating Powerful Leadership Connections in the Smallest of Moments. Doug is a graduate of the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University and has served as the chairman of Kellogg Executive Leadership Institute for 5 years. Finally, Doug is the ever so proud husband of Lee and father to their three remarkable children. Thank you, Doug, for joining me today on the Introvert Ally podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here.
It's really very, I would almost say emotional for me to actually see you in person and remember back in, I just had to look it up, over 12 years ago that I was first introduced to you by Susan Cain, who we all love and are so grateful to. And I think Adam Grant as well. And I was looking for an introverted leader to highlight. And at the same time, around that time, number one, you agreed to write the foreword to my first book, The Introverted Leader, which was so impactful and really brought to life what it was like for a senior level leader to actually come out, if you will, as an introverted leader. And then the other thing that happened was, I remember getting a call from, back then people used to call, 2011. Remember that?
Back in the day. Yeah.
You remember the reporter, she's now retired from the Wall Street Journal, but Joanne Lublin?
Lublin.
Yeah. You're probably saying it right. Yeah. Who covered work issues. And she was writing, she discovered this topic of introverted leadership at senior levels, and she was really trying to dig and find out, you know, who she could interview who were real leaders, and told me at that time, and I never forgot this, that she had a very difficult time finding people who would speak on the record, that they were quiet or that they were reserved. And you were one of those people that spoke, and that was a very, that was the turning point, that article, I think, back in 2011. So what I wanted to start out with was, I know you've talked a lot about leadership. That's your focus and you've studied it your whole life. Let's start out with the introverted angle here. When did you first discover that you fell more on that side of the spectrum?
Well, you know, I think all of us have been exposed to the language, the word introvert, the language, was introduced to me very early in my career. We had, I think I was at General Mills at the time. This is back in the 70s. We took a Myers-Briggs test, right? And then all of a sudden it said you were an introvert. And that had like a, that was like you didn't want to admit it. You wanted to fake it until you could make it, because you felt back in the 70s and 80s that you had to be the outgoing leader if you wanted to amount to anything. And so I sort of, I think the language today is I was sort of covering my introversion, but I was increasingly aware of it. And then I became very good friends later in my career with a woman by the name of Deborah Benton, who's a leadership consultant. She's written many books advocating for women. My favorite was Lions Don't Need to Roar. And she helped me sort of process this a little bit. And then I had a good friend who helped me, who was an expert in Myers-Briggs. And I learned that the Myers-Briggs four-box matrix was just the beginning of this, and that it was actually 144 boxes. And I learned some nuances around introversion that just made sense to me. And so it's been a continuous journey as I've been learning as I've been going. Fundamentally, I discovered, my friend Bob said to me, Doug, I can make this very complicated, 144 box matrix, but basically I would ask you, how do you get your energy? Do you get your energy by being with people or by being alone? And immediately I said alone, in terms of needing quiet time to process things, everything else. So I got into that space probably seriously about 20 years ago. But to be honest, even when I became a CEO, I was still trying to, I was still trying to be the outgoing CEO that I thought I was supposed to be. And it was exhausting. I couldn't sustain it. Ultimately, using your language and my language, I came out of the closet on my introversion, and I actually mentioned it to the company. And I said to, I think it was on a, I don't remember, I've said it publicly and I wrote about it. And I basically said, you know, I can appear to be aloof because when I'm standing in a room, I'm the CEO and everybody's thinking, oh, he's being aloof. I said, you need to look at me through different eyes. You need to look at me and say, oh, there's Doug Conant again. He's standing off to the side because he's shy and he's having trouble remembering names. And so then I would have people coming up to me all the time, executive assistants, you name it. Doug, are you being shy again? Are you having trouble with names? Let me help you. And all of a sudden it just became fine. And I was so much more comfortable. It was so freeing, and I didn't realize what a prison I was in. While I was doing it, it was just draining me. And I'll tell you one more story. You can figure out if you want to include this or not. But Deborah Benton had a profound influence on me. I flew out to Denver. She works out of Denver. I flew out to Denver for a day, and we did some work together. She helped me sort of come out of my shell. And I wasn't using the introvert language at the time, but I did say to her, or she observed with me, she said, Doug, I can see that you are not, that you're introverted, and that when you're standing in a group, I bet you're standing away. You're like two steps back, because you don't want, you're real cognizant of space. And she said, if you want to change your relationship with everyone, I want you to take one step closer, just one step closer to the conversation. And I said, well, I'll try it. It feels really weird, but I'll try it. I'm telling you, it changed my life. One step closer. All of a sudden, I was in a different world, a different zone. I felt awkward about it, but I started connecting with people better. One step. It's hard to believe. But if you're an introvert who's sort of drawn the lines of how you're going to engage and you start to gently move those lines closer to people, I found it was incredibly helpful. So between that and my coaching around, just sharing it, and my introversion, I found it really changed my life. And, I was able to show up more authentically. I had better energy. I had enough things to deal with, much less covering that I was an introvert.
That is so freeing. Yeah, I love the word you use, declare. You've talked about declaring your introversion. And what you're saying happened was that people then could read you, that you manage perceptions that way. and they were supportive, you know, oh, Doug, you're having trouble following names. Take me back to that story for a second. When you were in the circle, you moved closer in the circle. The next step then would be, one would think, to have a conversation, right? And so a lot of introverts have a hard time that, as they share, with initiating that, like getting into the circle. So did you find it just naturally happened because you were there?
A couple thoughts. One was, when you get one step closer, you can't avoid the conversation. And so I found it very organically happened. That having been said, I have, you know, we wrote a whole book on this called Touch Points in 2011. I do think, and this works particularly well for introverts, I believe in leading by listening. So, and introverts are good listeners. So, but you do have to ask questions. you can listen to what's being said without being engaged. That's possible. But you can get a little more engaged and ask a question and then listen. And I found that for an introvert, leading by listening was a powerful tool. It sort of connects with the Stephen Covey philosophy from Seven Habits about seek first to understand, then to be understood. Because as an introvert, it's just much easier if you have a better feeling for the lay of the land before you jump in. So leading by listening is a powerful tool coupled with a willingness to get one step closer. If she had said two steps, I couldn't have done it. You know, it would have been too much. So I think every one of us introverts needs to find our way and get one step closer. It might be a big step or a little step, then engage and lead by listening. And for me, that worked.
That's so interesting what you're sharing. I interviewed Pat Waters, who you might know on the podcast, and she talked about when she was in HR at LinkedIn, there was a group of them at meetings. If they didn't have a role, they were sitting, I'm thinking about space, way in the back on the side, almost out the door. And that she was identified. So this is a lesson for those of us who are maybe more extroverted, who are going to either judge or probably judge that as being that they're antisocial. But also she actually had a leader who engaged her in educating, like you have, by example, talking about her introversion. And she became a zealot, like, you know, and sharing and declaring her introversion. So I think it's just a really good lesson for those of us who want to be allies is to observe even where people are standing in a space.
Physical space, managing that space differently in a way that makes you, that sort of challenges you to be a little more engaged and a little more aware, is a terrific tool for sort of creating a new paradigm for yourself that you can live with. And, you know, at first I wasn't taking one step closer with everybody. I was taking one step closer with people I was sort of comfortable with. And then I thought, wow, this is working. And in the fullness of time, I just started connecting with people totally differently. And this process of declaring is mission critical. People are not, this is not rocket science, but I discovered, well, first of all, I was sitting in Pat Waters' seat most of my career. I was not at the table. I was like pretty much everybody else. I started at an entry level and went through layer after layer after layer of organization in three different companies. So I know what it's like to to sit around on the edge, and I know what it's like to be in the center. So that's the first observation. The notion of being fully present for people is a powerful one. And I found that if I could be just stepping forward, listening, a little more present, I was learning stuff. You know, part of this is exercising a little curiosity along the way. and saying, gosh, I didn't think of it that way. You know, and people aren't mind readers, so they're not going to help educate you if you don't ask questions. All of us think, well, they understand where I'm coming from. As a CEO, you start thinking, how many times can I say this? And to people, the answer is never enough, because they're not paying attention to your mind 24/7. You have to constantly be saying, here's where I'm coming from. I excuse me, I don't remember your name. Or, you know, excuse me, I'm uncomfortable because fundamentally I'm an introvert. Just owning the behavior, declaring it, saying it so people know where you're coming from. And then what I found is people are remarkably accommodating. You know, they want to be helpful. Oh, are you being shy again? Come on in. Join us over here.
They're not mind readers, like you said.
No, they are not mind readers. And so that notion of declaring yourself is, I think, critical as a leader. It's a big topic in my leadership philosophy, but it's really, I think, mission critical for us introverts.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about your leadership model. I think, well, first of all, self-awareness seems to be an underpinning theme of your life, you know, that, and I really resonated when you share your story about the influence in Blueprint, in your latest book, The Blueprint, and I've heard you talk about this, about Neil, your outplacement counselor. I have a special, just side note, affinity for outplacement counselors because I did that for many years. And the exercise, maybe talk a little bit about the turning point there for you with writing your autobiography, because I think this all connects in being self-aware and being able to then share who you are with the world.
Yeah, it does. It was interesting. I went into work one day and was called into the senior vice president's office of a subsidiary of the first company I worked for. I'd been working for that company in the subsidiary for 3 years, for the larger parent company for a decade. And the senior vice president called me into his office one day and said, your job's been eliminated. You need to be out of here by noon. He was very uncomfortable. He wasn't a bad person, but he didn't know how to let somebody go. And the goal was to get me out of the office as quickly as he could. And on my way. And so I went through that. I went home to my wife, my two small children, and my very large mortgage, feeling every bit the victim. And they sent me, they were so uncomfortable letting me go, they didn't even tell me my benefits or anything.
Yeah, your package.
So the head of HR called me when I was at home. The first time he called, I was so mad I hung up on him. Then I called him back because I realized I can't be home. I got to get a job. So I called him later in the day and he said, well, I want you to go meet with this outplacement counselor, Neil McKenna. I did. I did call him after that conversation and I said, Mr. McKenna, I've been given your name. It's late in the afternoon. I'd like to make an appointment to see you at your convenience. And he said, Doug, I want you to come over right now. I said, yeah, but it's almost dinner time. He said, I don't care. I want you to come over right now and we're going to talk this whole thing through. So I went over there at, say, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I was there for 3 hours talking to him. And all he wanted to do was listen and help me. And I'll tell you, being an outplacement counselor, you know how important that is. I needed a place to land and he gave it to me.
Right.
But he was also a crusty old New Englander. So he wasn't going to pity me. He said, okay, now let's go. And he said, the first thing I want you to do is write your life story, handwritten. I want you to write by hand. I wanted both sides of the paper. So it was 100 pages. It was 50 pages, both sides.
Wow.
And I did it in 2 weeks. And you can do things like that in 2 weeks when you're not working. It's amazing. When you're out of work, how much time you have. So I turned it into him in 2 weeks, and then I was getting to know him. By the end of the first month, we met again, and he said, Doug, I love this. This is so informative. Your life story, and I told you not to leave anything out, and you didn't. And he said, Doug, I'm perplexed. The person I'm reading about in this story is not the person I'm talking to today. in this story, you're a ferocious competitor. I can tell from your competitive tennis, from a lot of your accomplishments and from your family background and where you come from and how your family has persevered in this country. I see one Doug Conant in this biography. And then I have you sitting in my office being polite and answering my questions and not showing me who you really are. Basically, wow. I was being introverted. Yeah. And I was shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And I was just going to try and get a job. And what do you want me to say? And I'll say it. And he challenged me to show up in a more authentic way. He said, you're misleading people. The person you're presenting is not the person you are. In my language, he was challenging me to declare myself.
Yeah.
But I was scared and I was introverted and I wasn't prepared to acknowledge that.
Uh-huh.
But in the fullness of time, with his coaching, I became less scared, still introverted, and I shared enough of myself to within a year, took a year, to get a good job that got me back on track.
The right fit, right?
The right fit. And but it wasn't perfect.
No.
I had to be more comfortable in my skin so that I could be effective in all the situations I had from then on, because there's never a perfect fit. And if you think there is, you know, I have some land in Florida I'd like to sell you. So I found that being more authentic, sharing, you know, I when I teach today, I talk about how most leaders are leading by the seat of their pants. They're just reacting to what's come. They're doing the best they can. They have good intentions, but they're really not showing who they are. And I say, you know, in these days, we are all challenged to help as leaders. We're on sacred ground. Our challenge is to help the people we work with prosper. And to do that, we need to lead with courage. And it's hard to show the courage of your convictions if you don't know what your convictions are. So I challenge them to become self-aware.
Yeah.
I challenge them to write their life story. I challenge them to examine it and draw conclusions from it and build it into the person they want to be. The language I use is, I'm trying to help you become the best version of yourself. I go back to an old Warren Bennis line, which you undoubtedly have heard. Becoming a leader is synonymous with becoming yourself. It is precisely that easy and equally that difficult. And so I believe, and introversion falls right into that. As introverts, we've got to, if we want to become the best version of ourselves, we got to start owning our discomfort with situations and start engaging in them in a way that can work for us and where we own it.
Well, Doug, you know, I love all that you shared. I where I've come in this work, we both have kind of referenced the fact that we've evolved over this last decade and a half since introversion became more on the scene, or this whole topic of personality. And one of the areas that really still frustrates me and I'm also encouraged by is that we are talking now about what people, individuals can do, right? As an introvert, here's how you can step into who you are. However, this is not really the topic that's top of mind on CEOs, you know, top list. Maybe now with diversity, inclusion, and equity, but I would love to hear you talk a little bit about what you think senior leadership needs to do, because there's still a lot of bias out there that I encounter in all kinds of organizations where introversion doesn't even make it. People are not even aware of their own personalities, their own values. Like you say, they don't necessarily have that point North Star for themselves. So then they're sort of operating in a vacuum and not engaging or encouraging these emerging leaders who are perhaps introverted. Does that connect what you think?
I'm not going to give you a soft landing on this, but I will talk about it. I don't remember where, but there was a leader speaking, and I was in the audience. And as he was closing, he said, okay, I'm going to put up on the screen. There are 10 two-letter words that will define the arc of your career. 10 two-letter words. And he put up the 10 without the words, just dashes. And everybody was sitting in the audience trying to figure out, what are the 10 two-letter words? What are they? And this will be relevant in a second. And the 10 two-letter words were, if it is to be, it is up to me. If as an introvert you are waiting for the world to invite you in, you might as well go watch Waiting for Godot.
Yeah.
Because you will be waiting a hell of a long time. If, you know, and if you are looking for the world to facilitate your coming of age as an introvert.
Interesting.
I wish you luck. If it happens serendipitously, that would be great. I would love all leaders to be more sensitive to this. But, you know, I talked about Warren Bennis earlier. You know, he coined the phrase in 1987, it's a VUCA world.
Yeah.
Volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. Today's generation has a new word because every generation has to have a new word. And so there's a cultural anthropologist who has said, well, VUCA world is right, but this today's world is a Bani world. B-A-N-I, brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible.
Well, that's an optimistic view of life.
You know, but everybody's looking for, how do I define this cockamamie world we're in? And his language was Bonnie. I would say the operative word here is anxious. It's brittle, it's nonlinear, it's incomprehensible. But anxiety is at an all-time high. If you're an introvert in a very anxious world and you're looking for people to treat you differently, I'm not optimistic. You have to treat yourself differently. You have to own the behavior, and you, in my opinion, and you have to gently work into it in a way that works for you. What I did, it took me decades to start showing up, and I know that's hard.
I think it's more of a combination. I really have seen examples of best practices where it's just a matter of awareness and having, I think, conversations like this can change cultures when people are aware that, oh, yeah, we don't, the same people are talking in this meeting, you know, over and over again. I'm not going to continue on that track. You know what I'm saying?
I don't disagree. I completely agree. But I'm trying to bring a realistic point of view to this conversation. In an ideal world, the worlds I create, the worlds I try and create everywhere I go are listening worlds, are worlds that have heightened sensitivity to the human condition, are worlds where people care about each other and in the fullness of time create the conditions for the people that work there to care about the enterprise agenda. Those are the worlds I want to create. But, you know, I've been in a lot of worlds, and I talk to a lot of worlds right now. I was recently talking to people in some of the CHROs in some of the world's largest companies, and they've got their hands full. And you know, we want DEI, we want this, we want that, and, you know, and nobody's satisfied because nothing's been done in a fulsome way. But if you did it in a fulsome way, you'd be neglecting all these other things, and because you can't do everything. And so what I'm encouraging introverts to do is to adopt the mindset, if it is to be, it is up to me. I want to own this. I want to behave my way to a better place where I'm in a way that works for me. I think Susan Cain starts to give us a blueprint for how to move in that direction. I think your book helped in that regard. So I think we can get there, and we have a community that's increasingly, if you will, coming out of the closet and supporting each other. So we're not alone anymore. I feel there was nobody for me to talk to in 2000. And then I met Susan, and then, you know, and then I learned about your work, and I worked with Deborah Benton, and I started to find that there's a community here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That will listen. But I also know that if you want to advance your life journey, it's the only one you've got. You have to own it.
Yeah. So as a person or as a group that wants to support people of all kinds of personalities and that kind of, you're saying it's up to each of us. Like, we have to own our careers. But one of the things I know that you go back to a lot is that one-on-one connection. And I think that seems to be the power of your work as I see it.
Well, I think in work, forget being a CEO, but it helps. But I think, look, for me, work is personal. This is a personal conversation I'm having with you. And I take my work personally every minute of every day. So if I want to show up in an authentic way, I believe I have to show up in a more personal way. Now, the good news is, I don't have to do much to be more personal than the other guy, because it's largely the corporate world, if we're dealing with corporate, but the organizational world is largely a transactional world. It's not personal. You know, it's not personal. It's just business. Bullshit. It is personal. And if you want to create the conditions for people to really thrive and make a difference, you damn well better treat it personally. I can't imagine anybody accomplishing anything of any significance if they didn't take it personally. And so my work is personal. I do drive down to one-to-one relationships and small groups, but I know it can't stop there. As a leader, you're leading thousands and thousands of people. As a thought leader, you're trying to influence millions of people. And so you've got to have a framework that can work broadly. But when you show up in every conversation, you want that person to feel that we wrote about it in Touch Points, that you're listening, that you're framing the conversation, and then you're trying to advance it in some meaningful way. And
you know, I love that. I just have to interrupt you for a second, because when I heard you share that recently, it really made me remember why I first got into this work and where I had an introverted boss. Actually, she was a few levels above me when I think back on it. And I remember that short conversation, those short interactions I would have with her when she was so with me. And then she moved it forward. The conversation, it wasn't just like, oh, connecting with Jennifer, what's she doing, but what's your problem and what can we do? And I was like, oh my God, that's, so Doug, tell that quick model, because some people think it takes a lot of time to have these conversations. I don't have time for this.
Well, let me give you a short story that sets this conversation up. And this is mission critical for any introvert, any leader. I was doing a program up in the Poconos with some high potential leaders from Campbell, and I was doing it with actually the co-author of Touchpoints, Meta Norgaard. And it had been an exhausting, intense 3-day offsite. You know.
Oh yeah, I remember those.
And then we were sort of debriefing before we went back to work, and we took a walk around this lake in more like a pond in the Poconos. And Meta said, how can you leave all this? How can you go back to the chaos, the phone calls, the constant interruptions at work? You know, because she was more of an individual contributor and a thought leader. And it would drive her crazy to do what I did. She said, how can you do that? And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, Meta, you know, I don't think about it that way. I have a completely different paradigm. To me, that is the work. Because these interruptions and all these short conversations create the perfect platform for me to move the agenda forward. They're real. People are talking to me, and they want to talk to me at the time because there's an issue. And I can be helpful. and I don't have to spend a lot of time doing it. You know, I probably have 200 interactions a day as a CEO, and I have 200 opportunities to help. They're not distractions. It is the work. And so out of that conversation, we actually studied the subject and wrote the book Touchpoints, how powerful moments can have a profound impact on your life.
Mm-hmm.
And the model is straightforward. You have an issue, whatever it is, small one, big one, and someone shows up in the hall to talk to you about it. And we say it's not complicated. There are three things you do. You listen, frame, advance.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you listen for? You listen to being what's being said very carefully. And then you also listen to what's not being said. So you listen carefully. Then you restate it. You frame the issue that as you perceive it to make sure there's clarity around what you're talking about. And then you do your best to help the person advance the agenda. You don't solve it. If you start solving it, you're going down a rabbit hole and you're there for an hour. But you find a way to advance it so that they can come away feeling that they've been heard, that you understand the issue because you framed it, and that you've helped them advance it, but they still own it. And then after, I would do this every day. At the end of the day, sadly, I had a 2.5-hour commute home, so I had lots of time to think about things. But I would ask myself, well, how did today go? How did it go? Was I listening? Was I making sure I understood things? Was I advancing the agenda? This listen, frame, advance model is incredibly powerful. And it takes leadership down to a level that you can own it. And you can show up with it. And it's so easy, even an introvert can do it, like me.
Well, also, I found that introvert, I don't want to generalize, but I am, that a lot of introverted leaders, they like to have a framework. I think everybody does. And in fact, I think some of my people, friends and colleagues who use systems say that extroverts really need those more to stay disciplined. But is that something that I know you share it in your work now with your folks, that those kind of models, is that something to say in the company that would be, you try to, spread beyond Doug?
Yeah, I think it's important that you be, I think it's important for people to declare themselves of how they want to show up as a leader. But I challenge them to create a model for what that leadership looks like, because I want them to reflect, study, and actually be the architect of how they want to show up. And I challenge them I help them do it. That's what the blueprint helps them do. It doesn't stop there, though. Then you have the model, and then we talk about, okay, how can I show up that way? What are the practices I can employ to live into my leadership model? And one of those practices could be, I want to listen better. I want to manage my touch points better in those small moments. That could be a practice. So it's a way of showing up as an introvert and being the kind of leader you want to be. And so I believe in the power of models. I'm here in Washington, D.C. as we're speaking right now. I work with an amazing organization here, nonprofit called the Partnership for Public Service. And we are the largest nonprofit that advocates for federal employees. There are about 2 million of them, and they can't win. They can't win with Congress. They can't win with citizens. And they're doing the best they can, and they don't get paid well. And so they sort of are saying, well, what's the job? What am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we worked at the partnership with leadership. I created this advisory leadership group with Amy Edmondson and Stephen M. R. Covey and a host of us. And we've created the public service leadership model. So we've done a leadership model for not individuals, but here's what you need to do to be effective in the government. And then we encourage them to develop their own leadership model and figure out, okay, How can I be more like myself, be the best version of myself, and plug into the expectations of leadership in the public sector? I think for people, extroverts or introverts, it's important to get more granular with this and more clear. Somebody once told me, and I buy it completely, that clarity is next to godliness. If I clearly understand something, then I can engage in it. If it's ambiguous, it's not going to happen. So I don't want to be prescriptive for people, but I think we owe them clarity with what we're expecting. I did it at Campbell. We created a Campbell leadership model. We encourage people to build their own and then find a way to naturally connect with the person they were and the person we were asking them to be. So this notion of creating frameworks, I think, is important. Otherwise, it's just words and assumptions, and it's messy. And you gotta make this as clear as it can be. Not just, and words work with some people. Actually, they work with me. But I find that models make it even more clear. And then you can choose to engage with it in a way that works for you.
And I want to encourage all the listeners on the podcast to get a copy of the Blueprint, 6 Practical Steps to Lift Your Leadership to New Heights. It's so accessible and practical, as Doug's saying, and I love how you weave in the personal that you talked about. It is really driven from that point of view. So thank you for that. So what do you admire about your extroverted colleagues and friends?
Their comfort at processing ideas externally and talking through things. As introverts, we are internal thinkers, and we tend to process everything and arrive at a point of view without talking about it with others, you know, because those others, that's not comfortable. And so, you know, growing up in a corporate world that was half extroverts, I learned that they brought a lot to the party. I was better off with them than without them. They would express things that I would probably not express myself. And I could learn from them. So I think the challenge for all of us is to engage with curiosity in these conversations as we just try and become the best version of ourselves that we can be. And we can learn. There's a lot to learn from extroverts that we can use to influence how we show up more effectively in a way that works for us.
Is there any message you'd like to leave us folks who aren't necessarily introverted that we just maybe something to consider as we're working with our colleagues?
When I had a chance to work on the 7 habits with Stephen Covey, the notion of seeking first to understand and then to be understood is, I believe it's the 4th habit, is mission critical for extroverts, because our organizations are not built to hear introverts, sadly. And you know, Susan Cain would tell you the most underleveraged resource in any company is the introvert population. But they're there, and if you listen, they will share with you. So what I've discovered, and this is this notion of what are we doing on DEI, what are we doing on all these things, as an extroverted leaders or introverted leaders, seek first to understand and show a genuine compassion for the understanding. For understanding the environment in which you're operating. As you earnestly try and learn and understand that area, you will gain credibility and leverage with the group that, in my opinion, you cannot gain any other way. You can't just proclaim it and say, I've looked at the survey and here's the answer and we're going to. No, you have to sit there and listen, and you have to roll around in it. And then after you've rolled around it in a while, you have a point of view. You then have to share that point of view, and then you have to say, what do you think about that? And you have to roll around in it some more. And then right when you're done rolling around with it, you probably have to fasten your seatbelt and go through it again and roll around it again. Extroverts, once they've processed it, have trouble processing it some more. But if you want to...
You got to go deeper.
If you want to earn the credibility of the entire organization, extroverts and introverts, and all of, and the six generations and all the, and the gender and all the diversity, you damn well better be listening. One last thought. My friend Jane Hyun, who is a champion.
Oh, I know Jane. Yeah.
And who's a champion of cultural diversity, would tell you that, you have to start with listening, but then you have to pretty quickly move to behaving. And, but you behave in a measured way because this is it's a challenging time now, probably because it's a Bonnie world and everybody's anxious. But, that's what I would say. Seek first to understand, then gently move to action and recognize that indeed it is a Bonnie world. And as Stephen Covey would say, you can't talk your way out of you can't talk your way out of something you behaved your way into, which is usually a mess. So you have to listen, and then you have to gently behave your way out of it.
These are lessons for all of us. Listen, take the action.
Yeah.
We started listening. We're ending at listening. We started, yeah. We'll say that again. Oh, that model again.
Yeah. Listen,
say it again.
Frame, advance.
Listen, frame, advance. Listen, listen, listen.
And then frame in advance.
Just to tell you a self-discipline action, I have an extrovert tell me recently, so when I'm listening, I count a certain amount of, I think like 5 seconds or 10 seconds and wait. And if nobody says anything, I still wait. Because the extroverts don't like the silence, you know?
No, they're wildly uncomfortable with it. You know, you sort of have to go to your yoga training and do box breaths. You know, you got to do the four steps around the box.
Yes, yes, do something.
Then you got to do it again.
Do something. Press mute on your phone. Okay, no, these are the great tips. So the last question I have for you is, what are you excited about now? What are you engaged in?
Well, what I'm excited about is what everyone else is anxious about. You know, the reality is the old hierarchies that were built around transactional relationships are breaking down. They're not working. That's great. The challenge is we've got to create new ones. And that's hard. And that's anxiety promoting. But the hierarchies had to come down. They won't work. So the beauty is we have the opportunity to create new models and to create new ways of being. And isn't that great? You know, as opposed to having a sea of henny pennies running around saying, oh my, the sky is falling in. Isn't that great? We have a whole new, we can create a whole new world. Let's go.
Let's go. It's never too late either to do that. Let's go. That's a new motto. I love it. You'll create a new model, I'm sure, for that as well. Of course. Well, Doug, you came off my PowerPoint slide as one of the introverted leaders that I and many others have been highlighting, as humble, as an incredible listener, as quite a leader. And you've led the way for many. So it's been just an absolute honor to see you live and almost in the flesh here. I mean,
as close as we're going to get for now.
Well, I hope someday we get to meet.
Yeah, and I said for now.
For now. For now. See, I cut you off as the extrovert there. I cut you off. Listen, it's been this hour just flew by, and I'm so excited to share this with our community. Do you want to just say how should people connect with you? We'll have it in the show notes, but what's the best way?
We encourage people to go to the website at conantleadership.com, but you can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. We are not necessarily promoting ourselves because most of what we do is free. And, but we are, we do have 400,000 leaders talking about leadership every day across our platform. And we invite people to join in, because, they're, you know, the world is filled with pessimists. And I don't know a pessimist who ever led the world to higher ground in anything. Never happens. I defy anyone to find a pessimist who led the world to higher ground. We have to get to higher ground. And those of us who are earnestly endeavoring to do that, we can work together to lift this world up. And that's what we're endeavoring to do at Kona Leadership. We invite people to join us.
Well, on that powerful note, I'm going to again encourage people to join on the social media community that Doug and his team have created, and also read the blueprint and touch points. It will really change you in substantial ways. So thank you, Doug. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Happy to help.
That wraps up another episode of the Introvert Ally Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you found value from our podcast, we'd love you to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. Also, please do share it with others. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.